Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a prison. Swangled in Fort
Lauderdale. I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on band.video, Rockfin, Odyssey, vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate your support. We know you have a ton of options out there. If you are interested in connecting with me, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions. We appreciate the support there. Speaking of support, we couldn't do this show without the amazing support of our sponsors. I try to curate sponsors based on what makes the most sense for you guys. So hopefully you will take a look at Chemical Free Body. They have been with us now for a little over 2 years. We love them. I take their products every single morning. And I do realize that when you get into the vitamin world, there's a little bit of scamminess going on there, and you never really know if the products work. I can tell you from personal experience that they work. Tim James, the owner of the company, is a fantastic guy. He's been on this show multiple times. He put me through the detox in a box package, which takes about 90 days, and it was so effective that I had to buy new shorts because they didn't fit afterwards. It's fantastic. They give you Green 85. You get gut detox, toxin detox, probiotics, and ultra enzymes, just capsules that you take. I think you might want to check it out if you are serious about getting control of your own health. You've been postponing it. Well, manana, next year, whatever. Look, the time to act is now. We want to be proactive. That includes being proactive about your health. Do this. You can go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro. You can read up about it. You can take a look at the program that Tim put me through. See if it's right for you. If you are so inclined, pull the trigger. Use the promo code macro on your way out to save yourself a little bit of money. They have free shipping and also a double your money back guarantee. Tim is pretty convinced you're not going to be returning the items. I've never returned any. In fact, not only that, I've stocked up for the winter. So I've got myself 6 containers of Green 85 waiting for me over the course of the winter. I'm not messing around. So if you are so inclined, chemicalfreebody.com/macro for the landing page. Use macro on the way out to save yourself some money. And since we are also talking about being prepared, and I would suggest that that's kind of a theme of this show, Solar Powered Lifestyle is our newest sponsor. They're going to help you out with solar powered systems. I mean, good Lord, considering what we see going on with energy crises that are being manufactured, we've got supply chain issues. You never know what's going to happen out there, but it would be nice to have a backup source of power. So if you're thinking about getting yourself a little power, a little solar panel kit for your for your house, for your car, for your job site. If you are a camper and you want to go camping, you've got that. Great. If you're thinking about a bigger one, one that you're going to permanently attach to your home, or maybe you have a cabin out in the woods that's off grid, then they have financing available. They've got everything you need. They have the big names, EcoFlow, Jackery. It's all there. That there's free shipping inside the United States. They also have a price match guarantee. So if you buy something from them, find it later at a lower price, just reach back out to them. They'll match it for you. They're veteran owned. It's a small business. They listen to this show. We certainly do appreciate that. So I'll tell you what, if you are in the market for something solar power related, just go to their website, bookmark it now, take a look at it. On your way out, use the promo code MACRO, solarpowerlifestyle.com. All of the links will be in the show notes for the sponsors and the guests. And if you need anything, just reach out to me. You can find me at the website. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm pretty excited about this because I remember watching the first Thrive movie and thinking, damn, this is really well done. We've got the man behind it. Foster Gamble is here. Hey, Foster, it's good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great, Charlie. Thanks for having me on. It's good to see you.
I really connect with your message. In your not just your message, but the way you deliver it, the way it comes across. And you go in, you know, and I read through everything. I get to your bio and it starts to make sense to me. And I think it's the Aikido background, is it not? Is that sort of like the anchor in you that sort of keeps you in a great state of mind where these things sort of come to you? Is it's because everybody I know that has a hardcore martial arts background is not in the parking lot at some bar kicking ass. They're actually avoiding that as much as they can. And they're using it to sort of build their lives in a very unique way. I feel like I'm just speculating here, but something tells me that Aikido has played a role in how this whole thing turned out.
Well, I think you're right. It's been a key part of it. I trained and taught the nonviolent martial art of Aikido for 15 years. And I'm not a fighter. I was an ice hockey player in Division I, so I had to defend myself.
So you're tough
but
by
I'm
nature.
Not out there starting fights. I would attribute it to a couple of things. The Aikido has been really important. And also my beloved wife, Kimberly, is also the director and producer of the Thrive movies. And she was very helpful the first time around when I was narrating the third chapter of Thrive One on the global domination agenda. You know, I can get pretty worked up inside when I think of the billions of lives that these creeps are destroying intentionally. And so that would start to come out. And Kimberly was very patient with me. She would say, Foster, I really, really get your passion. And I want you to keep that in there, but I want you to leave some emotional room for the audience to actually have their own feelings as well and not just be dealing with yours the whole time. It took 19 takes the first time before she finally said, okay, that was it. And I took a break. I stepped off the set and most of the crew was in tears. They had actually been really moved by what I was saying instead of scared to death. And it was a real lesson in a feminine power, that you don't have to cram something down somebody's throat. In fact, it really creates a problem for them in getting it. But if you feel what you're feeling and just transmit it to them and allow them their own space, then they can actually integrate it and, you know, put it to use.
Well, I have a business partner who's a former actor, and I remember he was talking to me about the rhythm of comedy and things like that. And one of the things that he said to me it had never occurred to me once he said it and made perfect sense, was he was talking about when you have a funny scene, how it's important for the actor to not laugh, because when the actor laughs, it takes the laugh away from the audience.
Oh. Exactly. That's the same thing right there.
Yeah. So that when you mentioned that, is that your anger or your frustration or your passion, like when you show that, maybe it takes it away and doesn't allow the audience to come to that feeling themselves, perhaps. Good to have a director who knows you.
Exactly. Right?
Who knows how to work with you, and good for you for taking direction, I would say too. It's very tough for a lot of us out there to recognize that, because we are passionate about this. It matters to us. It's a big deal. Like you said, a billion, when you think about a billion people or more suffering from the actions of these monsters, you want to just scream it.
Yeah.
But of course, we know how that comes across. They'll brand us, you know, they'll put a tinfoil hat on us and say that we're all crazy out there. It's not crazy. It's passion. And it's easily misled. So how did you wind up in this? What's the path that brought you here? Because the Thrive movies, the Thrive movement, it feels so awesome and so warm and encompassing, but has it always, I mean, how, what was the method that got you to this point?
Well, my first real wake up, as I depicted in Thrive One, was when I was in the sixth grade and we did our first nuclear air raid drill. And the teachers told us to get under our desk and, you know, put our arms over our head. And I'm under the desk and this siren's going off. And I'm just thinking, wait a minute, if this is the best they got for protecting against a nuclear blast, the adults in charge do not know what they're doing. And that was really the beginning of my committing myself to figuring out how human beings can relate harmoniously and successfully to energy at every level, whether it's spiritual energy, interpersonal energy, electricity, nuclear energy. And that's been a path for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And the energy, it's funny, we're talking about this when, as America and the world are starting to have these manufactured energy crisis. And I would say there's been a crisis of positive energy for quite some time, it seems. But we've got this tangible energy that they're talking about there being some sort of crisis. But, you know, so it's easy to be dismissive and put this stuff in the woo-woo category. Oh, you guys, you're talking about consciousness and you're talking about all this stuff. But this really matters, right? This is just because we can't maybe see it or maybe even quantify it to some level. It's not to say that it isn't there and isn't with us at all times. The energetic, I mean, I've done enough ayahuasca sessions and the like to understand that if we live our lives believing that the only thing that's real is what we can see or what we can feel with our own eyes, I feel like we're severely limiting ourselves. Have you found that, what is your relationship to the energy of the universe right now? I mean, because it seems to be out there everywhere. If you want to go out there and tap into it, or if you want to keep your head in the sand, it just misses you. So what's our relationship with this energy out there?
Well, you know, there's an expression in the martial arts world that the only thing more dangerous to go up against than a madman is a master. And we are, all of us, in the fight of our lives right now. And so it really matters where you're coming from as you engage in that struggle. And so the more masterful we can be, the more effective we're going to be. The more people are going to want to follow our lead, and the more effective we're going to be in actually resolving issues, not just complaining about them. And so for me, consciousness is really at the center of the whole deal. And when, you know, whether I was teaching meditation or I was a peak performance sports consultant for, you know, collegiate and professional athletes for a while, or whether you're actually dealing with people who are trying to poison the air that you're breathing and the food that you're eating, they're trying to get poisons into your body and so forth. It's very real. I thought when I was younger that what a privilege to live an entire lifetime without a world war going on. Well, we are in a world war. We are in World War III, and it's what I'm sure you're familiar with, the expression in the literature on silent weapons for quiet wars.
Yes.
That's how they're fighting that one. And that's why so many people don't even know what's going on. Even when their friends are dying, their business has been shut down. They've been locked up in their homes. Their rights are being taken away. And still people are going, well, maybe the government will fix it for us. Yeah. So that's the predicament. And for me, I every day I work on centering my consciousness, relaxing my body, allowing my emotions to flow freely, and to then open my mind, but at the same time, focus my mind, and then be as effective as I can in interpersonal communication. So that's what I call the science of love. We lay that out in Thrive 2. And that's like a place to come from. In terms of your bigger question of how do I relate to, you know, the big energy, that was a lot of the theme of Thrive 2 also, is that I have been passionately studying physics since I was 14. And not the traditional fit. I did that for a while, but I realized the limitations of that. But I've been, working hand in hand with people like Nassim Haramein and Marshall Lefferts and Adam Apollo and Robert Grant, people like that. We've been working together for decades on the cutting edge physics. And Nassim allowed us to preview his unified field theory in Thrive 2. And that paper is about to come out. He's telling me that at first of the year, that's going to be coming out, and it will rock the scientific world. But beyond that, it will end up merging the consciousness and the science worlds in a way that we've all been longing for. Because as far as I can tell, we are whirlpools of energy in an infinite, alive, conscious sea of energy. Yeah. And our challenge is to every day learn better and better. How do I learn to resonate harmoniously with that energy rather than go up against it? You know, if you try to walk around leaning over, you're going to get sore very quickly. It's going to take over all of your thinking. If you're abusive to people, you're not going to have any relationships. If you don't take care of your body, if you don't take care of your relationships, if you don't take care of your finances, then all your attention is going to go into unnecessary struggles. But if you do your best to master each of those areas, and by master, I don't mean that you never make a mistake or that you're perfect, but that you're actually learning the principles, learning the natural principles of, okay, how do I align with gravity? How do I let my breath flow? How do I really listen to other people and then share myself authentically and you know, play that real game of intimate interchange with other human beings. Those are the types of skills that are all aligning with the structure and the flow of the unified field.
You know, when I first got my own personal taste of this was when I signed up for a 4-day transcendental meditation course where I was going to go through the whole thing. This was in Las Vegas, and it was me and the TM teacher, and we had to wait for another guy to sign up. And then when this guy signed up, he's like, all right, we got two, we can do it. So we went through. The first day was explaining, you know, everything and explaining the energy and this and the flow and how, you know. And we were kind of working on this, on breathing and these techniques. And I said to him, oh man, this kind of feels like the Force from Star Wars. And he said, it's interesting that you say that. He said, did you know that George Lucas was deeply involved in transcendental meditation? I said, no. And so we start watching the videos of the guy and I go, he's like Yoda. And he goes, again, George Lucas, you know, like, you know, showing the, I forget his name, the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. Yeah. And he's talking, and he's doing this talking. And I go, holy shit, it's Yoda, you know? And so I had this kind of awakening and like, okay, wait, there's a little bit more to it. And that kind of taught me that to slow it down and get myself in a different state of mind that wasn't, you know, I wasn't going to Mars or anything. I had calmed down and I could feel myself from time to time. I could feel myself just unclogging or something. And it was sort of like, I was like, my back would crack and I'd feel like, oh, I let all this pressure out. And I wasn't doing anything except being who I'd always been, but he taught me a technique. So I know that this is possible. I know that the idea of having a different relationship with this energy that's all around us, that binds us and connects us to the universe. It gets, you know, it's easy to dismiss it as just like airy fairy type stuff, but it's very real. It's had a very big impact on my life. I'm assuming the same with you. Yeah,
absolutely. And my first spiritual discipline was sports. I played many sports at a high level, and I just really enjoyed the sense of improving, of going for excellence. And when, you know, occasionally you get in the zone and it just feels so great. It's like, oh, this is a glimpse of what's possible. And then I studied self-hypnosis. I studied Zen. I studied yoga, on and on, multiple practices, really all through my lives. I was a musician. So when I stand back and go, okay, well, what was the point of all that? The common denominator of all those things was, how do I come into harmony with life energy? Mm-hmm. And that's what Aikido, the word actually means in Japanese. It means merging or blending with the path of merging with life energy. And the other name for it is the great love, you know, not the love, yeah, like, well, I used to really have a crush on her, but not anymore now. It's not that kind of thing. The great love, the I, the kanji, the first letter of Aikido, that means the great love, being one with the life force of the universe. And the one thing I know is that everybody wants to be safe. Everybody wants to protect themselves, and everybody wants to experience as much love as possible. Yeah. The cool thing is that those two are really the same thing, because when you don't feel safe, the universe is coaching you on, let yourself breathe, stop eating crap, you know, treat people better. You know, watch what the food that you eat, is it actually grown cleanly? The energy that you're consuming, where does that come? Every single day, every experience that you're having is coaching you on, okay, how do I operate from the state that you just described, Charlie, where in a sense the gunk clears out and the boundaries disappear. You still have your own sense of self, but you're distinct and unified at the same time with the unified field. And that's what the Taurus shape allows, whether we really go into in Thrive One and Thrive Two,
yeah,
is that every sustainable energy system in the universe is this Taurus. And the key to a Taurus is that it is it's a distinct system separate from others. You can point to it. And yet at the same time, it's open. Open at the center, open at the top and bottom, and therefore it connects with the entire rest of the universe. That's our true nature. And to the extent that we recognize that, then we can not only survive, you know, we can kind of master safety, but we can actually move into thriving, where our spirit expands, where we're coming from love, where our technologies and our communication systems and our energy systems, our money systems, they're all adhering to these natural principles. And that's what we need to figure out right now if we're going to make it as a species.
Yeah, because it seems like the people in positions of power right now have figured that out and have disconnected us from that power system as a way of making sure that we don't figure that out. You talk a lot about in Thrive, when we're talking about free energy, we're talking about the concept of free energy. And now we've all of us in this alternative media have heard the stories of the guy that develops the car that runs on water and then winds up with a bomb in his house the next day, you know, something like that. So we know that free energy has been discovered, or there's a, you know, people have sought it and found it and have had that compromised. And so where are we with regard to free energy? I fully understand that the minute someone comes out and rushes over to the patent office, things seem to go horribly wrong for them. But it's not to say that that's going to work for everyone. At some point, this free energy is going to be exposed and delivered to the masses, is it not?
Absolutely. And it's an exciting time, because obviously there is no working free energy device easily available on the market right now. I've spent the last 20 years looking for them, and I feel like, honestly, I've found about almost half a dozen. And so the challenge now is political, it's security, it's funding, and it's working with these inventors to get their ego out of the way, because these are all brilliant people who've actually, there's a ton of hoaxers out, over 95%. Of the things that I've seen are not what they're claimed to be. But that still leaves a significant amount, and any one of these is going to change the entire game. In Thrive 2, I scroll a chart, a list of just about 25 or 30 free energy inventors who have either been killed, disappeared, threatened, or gag ordered to stop what they're doing. The powers that want to be in control, they would not be doing that if none of these devices were real. And also, you know, even the government now is admitting that there are extraterrestrial beings who are visiting us with craft that goes, you know, 20 times anything that we have come up with in terms of velocity. So it leads to the question sooner or later, well, how are they getting here? Because they're not burning Exxon coming from a neighboring star system.
No, they're not.
So obviously they're accessing the energy of the unified field as they move along somehow. And as Adam Trombley says in Thrive One, that's why they don't want to acknowledge either the free energy or the ETs, because if they acknowledge the ETs, then people are going to go, okay, well, how do they get there? And when can we get access to that energy? Right. So I'm working with a group now up in Idaho called Make a Difference Energy Systems. Mad Energy. And they're doing a really good job. I'm kind of sending my leads to them right now because they've got great business people, great attorneys, great engineers, great security. They've got significant funding and they are going after these things. And I think that within the next 2 years, we'll be seeing multiple devices coming out from all over the world. And each of the devices that I've seen that actually work, they all have a different approach. They all look different. Some of them are magnetic. Some of them are crystals. Some of them are spinning EMF fields. Some of them are radio frequency. They all have a different approach. But the common denominator is that they're all mimicking and resonating with the toroidal energy systems of the unified field.
So let's explain what the toroidal field is. It looks like almost like a flowing feedback loop of energy with a hollow center to it, right? This strikes me as being almost like it when you see the pictures of the magnetic field of the Earth. You see this. Is this sort of a very natural occurring form in the universe?
Yeah, for anybody who's not from, I wish I had a model in front of me right now, but they, let's see. This would be one. This is just a woven reed, but this is a toroidal shape. It looks like a donut or a bagel. Mm-hmm. And the key is that it's a continuous surface with a hole in the middle. And most people have never even heard of that. We're not taught about it in geometry class and in school. It's even in a lot of physics classes. However, it is the fundamental energy pattern for sustainable systems, as far as we can tell, at every scale in our universe, from the Planck spherical unit, which is like kind of the smallest thing that we can measure in any way, all the way up to the clustering of galaxies and the universe itself, because I think this is one universe in an infinite series of toroidal universes. Mm-hmm. No system lasts if it's not toroidal. In the early days of when people were trying to copy Tesla and creating free energy systems, they would usually make it in a sphere or a cube in a box. And they would have to build these shrapnel walls in their labs because once they would crank the thing up, the energy would start multiplying and then it would either freeze or fry. And if it fried, it would explode and send shrapnel. Well, if they paid a little more attention to Tesla, Tesla was famous for the Tesla coil, which was a torus just like this, because he knew that that's how you resonate with what the universe itself is doing. So each of us has this toroidal energy field, this electromagnetic field around our body. So does every cell in our body. So does every atom. So does every proton. And then you start going up. So does every planet, every solar system, every galaxy. We're all just these spinning whirlpools of energy. In fact, if you go down to the smallest level, there's nothing there. It's just a whirlpool of energy. And that's where the consciousness comes in, because our body is made up of, you know, trillions of atoms and cells and so forth. And all of them have been replaced, you know, all the cells within the last 7 years. So what is cohering this body that I call Foster? Well, so by definition, who I truly am is a metaphysical locus of consciousness, which knows how to organize all of that energy into sustaining my being for, you know, hopefully 100 years or so. But once you realize that, then it changes the game on everything, particularly things like like the fear of dying or the transhumanist movement, you realize that we don't need to turn ourselves over to computers. Who we are is already boundless and eternal.
Yeah, for sure it is. And of course, these people at the World Economic Forum, they want to cut that link between us as a conscious being and the universe or whatever we are a part of. They want to disconnect us, much like they want to disconnect us from knowing what gender we are or whatever, you know, whatever they can do to make us feel more isolated and disconnected from each other and society. I think that works to their advantage. But of course, we're not going to allow that to happen. We're going to call them out on their insanity, wherever we see it. And I think that what you guys are doing over at for those that want to check it out, thriveon.com is the website. I definitely encourage people to go check it out and see. I'm going to have all the links for everything in the show notes too. If people want to get over and see the movies, check the movies out. There's you can join this whole network. I mean, talk to me a little bit about that. What is going on over there? What would somebody be in for if they joined up with this Thrive On network?
Yeah, like you say, it's all located there. That's kind of the trunk of the tree is Thrive On, and our movies are there. There's hundreds of blogs that I've written over the years, and there we have a bunch of great articles and videos from other people as well that are relevant, and then so. We put these two films out into the world, and they got literally over 100 million views. A lot of people are aware of this now. So what I was drawn to do next, just like you are with Macroaggressions, is to provide a portal where people can engage in the deeper conversations. And so three Saturdays a month, I do a show called The Freedom Portal. And one show will be, I'll do a download on a particular topic, really in depth, and then we'll do Q&A. Then the next one, I'll bring on a cutting edge expert in whatever sector we're exploring. And then the third one is just a community gathering where we get on like a Zoom meeting format, and people can turn their cameras and mics on and so forth. And I'll usually talk about current events for 20 minutes or so, and then just open things up for the whole community to interact with each other. So that's the Freedom Portal. And people are really seeming to value a lot from, number one, finding community, particularly during the COVID fiasco. It became more and more dire for people, especially truth seekers, to find people that they could get together with, that they could have the true conversations. And so the Freedom Portal is a very effective way to do that. So the final piece of the puzzle right now is that when people have the opportunity to not only hear a lot of information and connect some dots, but to actually then engage in this conversation and community, what happens naturally for people is sooner or later they go, okay, I get it. You know, we're in a real pickle here and it's dangerous as hell. So what can I actually do about it? You know, I can send links around to my friends and you know, watch videos on Telegram and this and that. And that's great. Education is the first step. But ultimately, we actually need to disengage from this whole tyrannical system and then ultimately to mobilize it and obsolete it, actually replace it with thriving whole systems. So what we're doing for that, we've been in beta for over 9 months now. We had a software development team working for a year developing what we're calling the Thrive Solutions Hub. And I'm super excited about this because it just simply doesn't exist out there. If it did, it would have saved me a lot of time and money. But no one is doing, as far as I can tell, exactly what we're doing. And what we're doing is it's an online platform that is decentralized, open source, totally secure. You can do encrypted document creation. You can do encrypted video conferencing. And then you can also just follow all different groups, any groups that you want who join by sector and by issue. We use a 13-sector model that covers all of human endeavor, and it allows people to organize globally by sector, and then more specifically, by issue. So people can come on there and create an individual space, or they can create a space for their group. Then they link up with other groups who are interested in related topics. And so it becomes kind of a social media hub, but it's not really for just, you know, hanging out or posting, you know, dancing puppy videos or something like that. This is it's a fun but serious platform for actually creating whole system solutions. And one of the things that we're offering, besides all the security and privacy, is what we call shared resources. So if someone has just, there's three different groups on the platform who've all won lawsuits recently, you know, against vaccine or mask mandates, you know, getting fired from the nurses and firefighters and so forth. And so when someone wins a lawsuit like that, if they choose to, and most of them are, then they can simply upload their materials, their strategy onto the shared resources. And then someone else out anywhere in the world who's in a similar predicament can save all the time and money that that first group spent by coming up to speed and just go to the shared resources. And so that's a way to share best practices, you know, that type of thing. We archive them by sector and issue. And then the final one is what we call the network for networks, because I personally believe, and I'm very encouraged, that the world is turning right now. The whole thing is turning in a very healthy direction. It could be very ugly during the transition. There's still a lot of suffering coming, but I think we've crossed the tipping point. And that's with our current structure. I know personally there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of truth and freedom groups all over the world who are doing great stuff in every sector. Imagine if even half of them were actually connected with each other, so that when they had a mailing to go out, when they had a great event coming up, a new fundraising strategy, a new scientific paper or something like that, they could immediately broadcast it to all of the networks in the Thrive Solutions Hub network. Now, we don't violate anybody's email list. This is the critical ethical part of this, is each person, you know, like yourself, you've got a following of people who have learned to trust you over time. So for anybody to go directly to them would be a violation. But if we send things out to leaders like yourselves, and then you choose, you look at the content and say, okay, is that something I want to share with my group? Does it look true? And does it look useful for my particular group? And then you choose, you either send it out or you don't. And when people are doing that all over the world in all these different sectors, I think we will have at least the beginnings of the largest and most effective grassroots global activist movement in history.
You call that coordinated activism, yes?
Beautiful, yeah.
Yeah. That's a great, and for people that are interested, as an example of these 13 sectors, we've got arts, economics, education, environment, health, justice, science, relations, worldview. So there's all the different, these different components, and somebody would pick the one that works the most, that fits the most for them, that they're interested in, and join that group and be a part of that group? Or could they?
The sectors are categories by which things are organized, but then a group, like Children's Health Defense, is okay. One of the groups that's involved. So they're in there, they're working in encrypted ways, they're working in public ways, depending on what serves them best. So they would identify themselves, tag their group as in the health sector, but would also be in the justice sector. It would be in the science sector. It would be in relations sector and so forth. So you just choose to locate yourself in whatever sectors work. And then the other key to knowing those sectors, and we've had tremendous success over the last 10 years in working with this sector model. We've stopped a lot of aerial spraying with glyphosate in Hawaii. We got GMOs labeled in Colorado and so forth. Through using this sector model, because kind of the traditional pattern for activists is, you know, an individual or a few people set out to save the world by themselves, and they burn out pretty quickly, and then the thing fizzles. But what the sector model allows them to do is, when there's an issue, like we were being sprayed back in 2007 with toxins over Northern California, and people were running around, you know, people were getting sick and animals were dying and so forth. And there was just kind of this chaos of attempts at activism. So someone suggested that we show the local group our sector model. So we got together I had a big town hall meeting and then had tables where people could sign up, depending on whether they were a lawyer or a doctor or a relationship specialist or an artist, media person, whatever. And then we had a single issue to take on, which is to stop this toxic spraying. So then we would get together once a week in by sector. I was in the economics group following the money to find out, you know, who was actually behind this toxic spraying. But other groups we had the scientists and doctors who went to New Zealand where they had a similar fiasco and, you know, got the truth, found out the science, came back with it. So the long and short of it is that they also once a week, a representative from each of these sectors gets together and coordinates all of the thinking and then reports back to their sector. And what happens then is that people are doing what they want to do and what they enjoy doing and what they're good at. And they only have to do that. And then this sector system naturally coordinates so that the scientists got us the true information. I found out that this was a secret $1 billion earmark from George Bush Jr. out of Homeland Security to spray Northern California and make a lot of people sick or dead. So we found out this information. Then the media people could come in and take it. We made documentaries. Then the legal people came in and we did lawsuits. The Mothers of Marin came in and took over the Golden Gate Bridge, all doing what they were good at. And in 6 months, we stopped a $1 billion project from the president. We stopped it cold. And we had already created a network that we then kept the network. And when they tried to come back with the West Nile and the gypsy moth and all these excuses to try to spray us, we were already coordinated and we shut it down in a week instead of 6 months.
That's amazing. You mentioned glyphosate in Hawaii. I know that Hawaii had a big problem. I'm headed off to Hawaii in the next couple of days. What happened there?
Well, we got called by some of our friends who lived on Maui, and they said that there's this problem. We're trying to be effective, but we're not. So would you coach us on the sector solutions model? So we had about, I think, three different long Zoom calls with them where we taught them how to use the model and how to divide, up the skills and so forth. And once they got it, once they knew how to organize, then they started protests. They started filing lawsuits. They had the science. Once again, it was probably about 6 months and they stopped them cold. They were doing massive glyphosate spraying in fields right next to elementary schools. It was just horrendous, but they got the whole thing stopped. And that's a few individuals taking on Monsanto and winning in a matter of months. It really helps when you've got the truth on your side.
Yeah, it certainly does. And you guys talk about this a lot in your work, the systemic change and consciousness shift, right? So is it that like you have to change the consciousness of people to go away from, oh, I'm just little old me, what can I do? I'm just by myself going up against the big bad Monsanto as an example here. Change that conscious and change that mentality and say, no, you are part of a network you just haven't identified yet going up against Monsanto. And by the way, you're going to be able to take them down because of that. So is it first step to change the mindset?
Well, I'm really glad that you brought that up because this is a little talked about thing. And oftentimes, if it's not addressed, it can be the reason for burnout. Because even if a person chooses the sector they want to work on, let's say it was health, and they choose a particular issue, let's say it's glyphosate spray. But then there's still a third category, which we call levels of engagement. And this has liberated a ton of activists. And what we mean by that is what you were referring to a moment ago, that do you want to work on meeting immediate needs? In other words, do you want to go out and actually help the people who have been poisoned? Or actually go out and do the protests on the street tomorrow, that type of thing? Or would you prefer to work on systemic change? So do you want to work on the communication systems, the economic systems, the deal with the local political systems and so forth? Because if you can make a change at a systemic level, then it really improves all the immediate needs that are associated with that. But then there's a third level behind that, which we call the consciousness shift. And that's when you're dealing with worldview itself. Because you can do a lot of systemic change. I mean, we've been rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic for centuries as human beings, but we're still locked in this myth of that we have to be ruled by some authoritarian elite.
I know.
So, but if you can get actually to a worldview which more accurately aligns with the truth of the unified field, in this case, that we're all individual sovereign beings who are interconnected and at the same time need to be free to unleash our creativity and do as we please, as long as we don't violate anyone else. That's the non-aggression principle.
Yeah.
Once you get to the clarity of the worldview where the ethical principles match the scientific principles, then your systemic change can be an expression of that. And then you end up meeting immediate needs in a way that people end up being fed. They end up being prosperous. They end up being healthy. They're getting along with each other. And this is the big challenge for humanity right now, is realizing these principles, aligning all of our systems with these principles, from truth media like you and I are doing to organic polyculture farming, which is more and more growing in the world. The same thing in education, same thing in currency. Every one of these systems, once you restore the authentic whole system operation, then you've got a sustainable system. They all fit together. They all follow these same principles. And if we make it to that awareness, to a critical mass of humanity operating in that way, and I think we'll be there within a few years, actually, because we're now obsoleting these creeps who are, like you said, intentionally destroying all the whole system. They're intentionally destroying food. They're destroying education. They're destroying the currency. And the most subtle one of all, and I'm so glad you brought it up, because even a lot of conspiracy activists don't realize that these folks are well aware that our thriving has to start with our consciousness. So they are going after making us sick. They're going after stopping, Falun Gong or transcendental meditation, whatever it is liberating people, and then literally getting stuff into our body, which calcifies our pineal gland and shuts down our awareness. And, oh boy, it's emotional for me even thinking about it. One of my closest male friends, I saw him recently, and he, even though he's very aware, he told me, he said, "Foster, I hate to tell you, in order to see my grandkids, I got the vaccine." And I said, "Well, I'm really sorry to hear that. How are you doing?" And he said, "Not well." And I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "From the day after I took it," he said, "it's like I've lost my will to live." And this guy is a vibrant musician, incredibly conscious guy. And this disconnection of our consciousness with our souls is part of the plot to take over humanity. And if we realize that, then we can start with our own consciousness, but then move this into every sector, expose these folks, get them out of the way. And I think that because they've pushed so hard, that the momentum of all this released health and released creativity and truth is going to accelerate us into a thriving world literally faster than even I have been able to envision.
Well, and I had Dennis McKenna on the show, and I was telling him I was reading quotes in my first book of Terence that I had, and I was reading them to him, and he was cracking up, of course, because Terence is the best at quotes. Right. And, he was talking about the other side of the coin. And so I did an episode recently talking about psychedelics and the other side of the coin. And part of what I wanted to mention to people was the demonization from a legal standpoint of keeping hallucinogens as a Schedule I substance, when which is defined as no medicinal value at all, and yet there's medicinal value here. So it's like crystal meth was like a Schedule II, and you're like, really? Marijuana and mushrooms are Schedule I and crystal meth is Schedule II. Right. So you can tell right there that it's not anchored in anything logical. It has to be about something else. And I start looking at the Schedule I drugs and I go, okay, these kind of open you up as Terrence said, they open you up to the possibility that everything that you know is wrong. And so that creates a real conundrum for the established powers, where they can't have a bunch of people questioning the rules of the game, because then they can't manage the game anymore. So I wonder, like, there's people that say, well, we just have got to get in there. We've got to vote harder. We got to get in there and change the system. And I go, no, man. The system is designed to be broken. I believe that if we're going to be successful in this endeavor, we have to build a better mousetrap and then attract the people that are done with the old system to this new system. Would you think, is that how you sort of envision the Thrive On movement? Is this a better mousetrap?
I haven't thought of it as a mousetrap.
Well, not to trap mice necessarily, but a better version of reality that is put forth by people that want what's best for us, as opposed to people that are worried about retaining power and keeping control or keeping their share or whatever. It's a very limiting mindset, as opposed to yours, which is power is infinite, energy is infinite, whatever you need, you can go and tap into it here, as opposed to their current system, which is limitations, scarcity and fear.
Yeah, let me answer that in two ways. The first is, I was talking with Greg Braden. He was on my show, and we were talking about the threat of the transhumanist movement and so forth. And I thought he said it really well. He said, obviously, there's a bifurcation going on in the entire world right now, in terms of worldview, behavior, attitude toward freedom, and that type of thing. And he said, you know, it's not our job to force the other folks to do anything. It's our job to be true to ourselves. And as we're going down our fork in the road, if it's real, then it's going to show up in our thriving. And the more we allow ourselves to thrive, the more the people who took the other fork in the road, and they're all hunkered down and they're afraid and they're sick and they're, you know, trying to boss each other around and boss us around. And when they're looking over at the other fork in the road and going, hey, wait a minute. Those folks are healthy. They're radiant. They're having a good time. They're feeling free, so that they will naturally come over. So that's the one side of it. And then in terms of the better mousetrap, I would actually use that metaphor to say the key is no more trap. And yeah, the trap is authority. It's the myth of authority and the myth that we need to be governed. I believe, and we really, this was the punchline of Thrive One and Thrive Two, that the main thing humanity has been missing is a universal morality. You know, it used to be that whoever had the biggest club and the biggest gang, they set the rules. Then, you know, then the church came in, and that was a big improvement, because there was at least an effort to lay out some code of ethics. But then they fought with each other and hundreds of millions of people died. And so then the rule of law comes along. And that was another big improvement. But, you know, different nation states have different laws, and laws got crooked, and then they fought with each other and more hundreds of millions of people were killed. So what is it that we're missing? And I believe that it's a universal morality, and not arrived at by whose opinion of what God's word is, but actually using common sense, using the scientific method of relentless inquiry to come up with what would be the basis of a true universal morality. And I don't mean just national. I don't mean just global. I'm talking about, imagine if there were a moral code that was applicable anywhere in the universe for all time. Like, it's hard enough to get your friends to decide where to go to dinner, to agree on that. How could you possibly get people to agree on that? Well, like the Torah has been here all along, and it's universal, even though we didn't recognize it, the non-aggression principle, which says no one is allowed to initiate force or fraud against anyone else except in true self-defense. That's the one thing that I have found traveling all over the world and talking to thousands and thousands of people about this. I've never met a single person who wants to be violated against their will. So, lo and behold, we've got something that all the great mystics have agreed with, that the entire world of humanity agrees with. So why don't we have that as the basis of this new mousetrap? Well, the reason is because if you apply the universal morality of the non-aggression principle, if you really apply that universally, then that shows up in not as democracy or communism or fascism. It shows up as voluntarism, where, like I said before, where people can do what they want. You have security organizations and you have competing private dispute resolution, and all the functions that we need are handled by ethical organizations that have to be accountable to the free market and to the non-aggression principle. So we just get rid of the monopoly on force and money and so forth. And once you have that, then every single individual is accountable for their behavior, whether it's interpersonal, whether it's financial, or whether it's environmental. And to me, that's the key out of this, except that when you apply it specifically, then governments are exposed immediately as corrupt, because they wouldn't survive without taking people's money against their will, which is theft, which is a violation of the non-aggression principle. So every authoritarian leader in the world doesn't want you to know about the non-aggression principle, because it will undermine their power over you.
Somewhere in the world, Larkin Rose is giving you a standing ovation right now.
He's one of the great spokespeople for that.
He certainly is. Do you know Patrick Smith? Have you met him, Big Patrick Smith?
No.
Big guy. Oh, he's met him at an Acapulco. He did the voiceover for the book that Jeff and I did on Audible. So he's 6'8" and he's got this big important voice, but he also is a proud, non-aggression principle, teaches classes on peaceful parenting, which is a good thing because he's a giant of a man. Right. And if anyone you want to be peaceful, it would be him. But, he'll tell you, he says, do you know why I open carry when I feed the homeless in Texas? He said, because it is illegal for me to feed the homeless in Texas. Yeah. But I open carry. And when I do that, that lets everybody know that I am not messing around. And if they want to come over and it's, so I'm thinking to myself, boy, only the government would see a 6'8" guy with a gun on the side of his hip who is out there voluntarily feeding the homeless when he's not teaching peaceful parenting and want to come up and harass him, because that's just what the government does. It's so disgusting to me. But when you were talking about that, I was like, I'm hearing Larkin Rose. I'm hearing it in my head.
No, this is the key. And I was first introduced to this from my son when he was in his early 20s. He's about 6'7" and a very strong guy. But it was really interesting he sat me down once and he said, we were just starting to make Thrive One. He said, Dad, before you make this movie, I think there's something you really need to understand. And he introduced me to this whole liberty thing. And he and I argued for like 3 months before I realized I was in spiritual, ethical quicksand, and he was just making sense. And I go, okay, I get it. It's almost embarrassing to realize what I've been trying to cling on to. So just start educating me, which he did.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up with this. I mean, let's give people some tips really fast. If we could send them out, they hear this, they're feeling pretty good. They're feeling pretty inspired. They're feeling, I hear so much bad news on the media and I try and stay away from the mainstream media, but still, it gets to you at some point. We feel like there might be a war there. We've got supply chain issues, inflation. We've got all this bad stuff. It feels overwhelming and a bit out of our control, but it's not out of our control, right? We do have some things. Just give us a couple of ideas and things that people can incorporate into their lives right away. They'll start to set their mind in a different, get them in a different framework where they can start to go in a whole new direction, maybe hopefully a better direction than where they're currently headed.
Well, people ask me when I'm out in public a lot. So even if I get this, what can one person do anyway? And so what I recommend in a nutshell is, if you haven't seen the Thrive movies, see it, because it'll save you 20 or 30 years. They're each a couple hours, they're long movies, but not compared to 20 or 30 years of floundering in the dark. That's why we made them, to save people time. Right. And so that'll equate you with, it'll introduce you to a lot of the principles. And then what I recommend to people is find the sector that you're interested in. find the issue that you want to work on, and then start working if you're not already. You can do it on your own. You can find a local group, and the Thrive Solutions Hub is helpful for that. Or you can join someone else's group. If you've got a group, you can join that with other groups and so forth. But the key is you're building the whole systems. You're restoring the natural wholeness of systems, whether it's honest cryptocurrency or organic food or truth media that's not serving the pharmaceuticals or the government or something like that. In every single sector, there are whole system solutions. So find the one you want to work on. Collaborate if you want to with other people to create that, so that when this giant house of corrupt cards comes falling down, and I'll tell you, as you know, Charlie, we're on the verge. It could be any day now. Literally, the economic systems, all it is about. Yeah, okay, exactly. It is about to come tumbling down, and all through history, that was followed by just the next regime would come in with or authoritarian dictates. This is the first time in known history, as far as I know, where we could actually have all of these sovereign, free, natural alternatives already on the table in every sector. So that when the other collapses, this is what continues. It's already there. People who didn't know about it, now this is their lifeline, but ultimately this is their thrive line. And if you realize the point of Thrive 2 was that we already have what it takes to thrive. All of these solutions already exist. Our challenge now is to recognize the myth of authority and obsolete it, get it out of the way, and then learn to collaborate with each other and literally create the thriving world that we were born. That's what we were born to do, is to create this.
It's going to require us to get out of our comfort zone and actually start doing something. But I'll tell you, I think we're all going to be better for it. That's Foster Gamble, everybody. He is the best. He is putting it all together. You can go to thriveon.com. All of the links are going to be in the description. If you want to get involved with this network, I highly recommend it. And we will be following and watch the movies too. The movies are really well. I'll tell you what. Watch the trailers first, and then you decide whether or not you want to watch the movies, because just watch the trailer. You got 3 minutes and 45 seconds to invest in a trailer. I'm sure you do. Do that, and you will appreciate it. Thank you for everything you do, Foster. We appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, Charlie. Thanks for your work and for the privilege of getting to come on with you and speak with your network.
Well, thank you. And if you guys like this episode, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow us on Twitter at Macroaggression, and the website is The Octopus of Global Control. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.